This is the Big Stories Podcast, where we tell the amazing and inspiring stories from across the Big 12 Conference.
Welcome back to the Big Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Cleon Wall. What a week we have ahead of us in the Big 12, and what a team we have at the top of the conference. Let's get into it.
The Big Stories Top 5 Teams.
Chase Davidson is joining me again, and we're going to choose our top 5 teams going from 5 to 1. I get to start this week. You know, every time we've done it so far, Chase, you're the one who gets to start. I'm going to be the one who starts this week. My number 5 team is Cincinnati. They did what they were supposed to do. They beat UCF at home 20-11. No, it wasn't pretty, but it was a victory, and they remain undefeated in Big 12 conference play. That's why I put Cincinnati at number 5. If they would have done more, I probably would have ranked them higher. But because it was kind of a game, their defense did look good. They were up 20-3 in the game. But because they only won 20-11, I'm just going to say this happens. You know, it happens to all teams. But this week, they're going to be at my number 5.
Yeah, not many style points for Cincinnati. But at number 5, I had BYU. And this week was a roller coaster for fans at BYU. They'd been fearing this kind of night the whole season. With 8 minutes left to go in the game, the Cougars were down 10, and it seemed as though BYU was finally experiencing the growing pains of starting a true freshman at quarterback. Bear Brockmeyer threw two picks earlier in the game, but he had the last word. He stepped up big when he was truly needed the most, and BYU escaped Tucson with a victory over truly underrated Arizona.
Okay, very interesting. Very interesting that you put BYU at number 5. Okay, who do you have at number 4?
At number 4, I got Texas Tech. And every week, can we get a Texas Tech close game? Like, I really want them to play a close game. We haven't even seen it yet.
It was close at halftime.
Yeah, it was a close game at halftime, but week in and week out, the Red Raiders are proving that they are far and above, at least right now, the best team in the conference. Kansas hung around, but could not hang on to the Red Raiders.
Very interesting. You're putting Texas Tech there. They are not my number 4 team. My number 4 team is Colorado. This team had not won a conference game up to this point. They came out, beat Iowa State 24-17. Joseph Williams had an amazing catch in the end zone to put them up 21-17. I believe he also had the 38-yard catch to seal the victory. I think it's a big win for Colorado. Again, their first conference win. They really needed something. And so to beat Iowa State, a ranked Iowa State team at that time, to beat them at home, I think that's huge for Colorado. So they are my number 4 team. My number 3 team is Utah. Looked impressive in their 42-10 win over ASU. They ran all over the Sun Devils with their massive offensive line. Devin Dampier made it all the right moves in the win. Defense didn't give Jeff Sims any time. That's why I put Utah here. I will still say maybe the reason why I did not rank them again higher is because I expected them to win. Maybe I should have ranked them higher because they won so impressively, but I will also say that Arizona State didn't have their starting quarterback, and that probably knocked him down a little bit. But Utah, they are my number 3 team. Who is your number 3 team?
I will say, this week's good because our top 5s are way different. I'm telling you right now, they are way different, and okay. I love it. I love it. Kansas State is who I have at number 3.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Yes, I called it last week. They lost last week at Baylor in a heart-throbbing, sad loss. But they have, in fact, as I said, figured some things out. Beating TCU this weekend was massive for the entire program just to regain its footing and not spiral into oblivion. No gut-wrenching pick sixes. They actually looked good. No turnovers. I'm really happy for Kansas State. Now, they got 4 losses already. They're 3-4. I don't know much else they can do, but they can hope for a bowl game. They do play Texas Tech, but there are 3 winnable games on their schedule I think they could do. So I think Kansas State could still maybe end the season with a winning record despite how bad it started.
I'll hold off my thoughts on Kansas State in a moment. Your number 2 team.
Yes, my number 2 team is the Buffaloes of Colorado.
Oh, okay.
Finally a conference win, and a great one too. Colorado is my number 2 because they actually looked like a really solid team this week. They finally found their QB. There's no more debate in Liberty transfer Caden Salter. No turnovers for the Buffaloes, which has really shot them in the foot. They had 3 last week. Give this Colorado team credit. They are 3-4 on the year, with all 4 of those losses being pretty close. Houston's the only one that was really kind of more space from them. The TCU game was so close. The BYU game, the Georgia Tech game. They may not be able to get a bid to the conference championship game, but on a good night, I sincerely believe they can probably beat anyone in the conference. Maybe not Texas Tech, but they can hang with most teams in the conference this
year. They've got the talent. They've got the talent to do that, especially quarterback and wide receiver. They're good. They're good. My number two team is BYU. I actually almost left them off this list altogether. Maybe it's because I didn't want to sound like a homer. Maybe it's not. It's because I didn't want to be a prisoner of the moment because they had to come back from being 10 down in the fourth quarter to beat Arizona in two overtimes. But that's why I had to put them at number two, because they did come back and they did beat Arizona in two overtimes. I'm not sure how long the good times will roll with the Cougars right now as they get to take on Utah this week. But it's heartening to see that this team won't quit. That's why I have them at number two. My number one team is Texas Tech. I don't know. I couldn't put them anywhere else. They were so impressive against Kansas. They built up a nice lead. Kansas comes back. It's 21-17 at half. And then they just go and score three more touchdowns in the second half. They sacked Jalen Daniels 9 times in this game. They have 5 other tackles for loss. Will Hammond replaced an injured Baron Morton during the game, and they were still able to pull away at the end. This team seems like the complete package. That's why I had to put them at number one. They were expected to win this game, but they won, and they won handily. Maybe that's why I put them at number one. I could have put Utah at number two, by the way, and BYU at number three, but that's why I had to put them at number one. Who was your number one team this week?
My number one team was Utah.
Wait. Okay, let's tell folks out there that you went to the Utah game. Speaking of prisoner of the moment, were you prisoner of the moment because you saw the Utes up close?
No, I don't think I was, because I sincerely was. I was expecting Utah to win, of course. No Sam Levitt, but they dominated this game from the very start and way more than I thought they were going to dominate it. And before you say, oh, Sam Levitt was gone, hey, Sam Levitt doesn't play defense. And Utah made Arizona State's solid rush defense look absolutely silly. Utah scored on nearly every single drive. I believe they punted once in the first quarter. And Arizona State could not do anything about it. I think if Sam Levitt starts that game, the final score is 42-21. I think they still put up 42. I was lucky enough to be in attendance at this game. Lucky is a funny word, because it was a very cold and a very wet Saturday night in Salt Lake City. But the fans still showed up and showed out. Utah is looking very good right now. Devin Dampier, I believe, had 3 or 4 touchdowns on the run. Ooh, he only had to throw the ball like 5 times, though. So that's, you know, most of his throws were sideways, not upfield, not north to south. So I'm still concerned that Utah is one-dimensional, but they are my number one team of the week.
My alternate, by the way, was Kansas State. They were my alternate team. When I was trying to pick, I'm like, who do I pick? I probably could have even picked Kansas State at number 5, but I put Cincinnati just because they've been playing so well. But they did look good. They were up 28-7 in that game and finally beat TCU 41-28. They're going to be in thorn in some people's side. Chase, thanks for joining us on the top 5 teams of the week.
The big stories, 5 biggest storylines. Number 5.
Baby, bye, bye, bye. Kind of sounds like an NSYNC song. Actually, it is. A bye week is coming at a perfect time for the trio of Iowa State, Kansas, and Kansas State. Let's first get to Iowa State. After winning their first 5 games, the Cyclones need a break after back-to-back road losses at Cincinnati and Colorado. I didn't see either of those losses coming, but, you know, what do I know? Coach Matt Campbell said the Cyclones need to stop shooting themselves in the foot. Those mistakes and losses could keep them out of the Big 12 title game. I know there is plenty of season to go, and some teams in front of them will probably lose 1 or 2 games, so all is not lost yet, but they need a bye to figure out their next steps and move forward. They get BYU the following week at Ames. Now to Kansas. They need a bye just to figure out their run defense. Texas Tech's Cameron Dickey ran inside, ran outside, and ran all over the Jayhawks. Offensive line also needs a break after Jalen Daniel was sacked 9 times. Kansas is also 2-2 in conference. They need to get things right in their next 2 games, as their last 3 could be pretty tough. At Arizona, at Iowa State, and home to Utah. Their next game is against Kansas State in the Sunflower Showdown. Speaking of the Wildcats, they are also 2-2, but at least they're coming off a win against TCU. I'm sure they would love to bury Kansas in Lawrence After the game in Lawrence, the Cats will host Texas Tech, play at Oklahoma State, and then at Utah. Listen, I don't think Kansas or Kansas State will win the league, but they could be irritants to some other teams, especially at home.
Number four.
Are you for real? Part two. Last week, I refused to put Cincinnati in the Are You For Real category after beating Iowa State at home, but they followed that up with a meh 20-11 win over UCF at home and are now 3-0 in conference. What's good for them is that they play Oklahoma State this week, and apologies to my friends in Stillwater, they're the worst team in the Big 12. We shall see if the Bearcats are for real once they host Baylor, play at Utah, host Arizona, and then host BYU. The good deal for them is that they host three of those games at Nippert Stadium. Another Are You For Real team is Arizona. I know I had them in last week, but they're 1-2 after their gut-wrenching loss at BYU. But they can show their mettle if they take down Houston at Houston. That would be an impressive win because the Cougs have looked pretty good this season. After going 4-8 last season, Houston is now 5-1 in 2025 and 2-1 in conference play, with its only loss coming to Texas Tech. This team is tough on defense and good enough on offense to pose a lot of problems for the Wildcats and ASU, who comes up after Arizona. If they win those two games, they could be 8-1 heading into their last three games at UCF, home to TCU, and at Baylor.
Number three.
The Blue Bonnet Battle means more than it has the last couple of years. That's the name of the game between Baylor and TCU. It's also known as the Revivalry, since the two former Southwest Conference foes split and are now back together in the Big 12. I kind of like the Revivalry better. Anyway, TCU is on a bit of a downer after losing at Kansas State, and Baylor has to be feeling great coming off a bye after two straight wins. We get more on this rivalry game with the Waco Tribune's Zach Smith. Being in the major football state of Texas with so many former Southwest Conference and Big 12 rivals, who is Baylor's true number one rival?
Baylor's number one rival is absolutely TCU. There's not even close. Texas Tech, okay, maybe Texas Tech comes kind of close. But I think overall, Baylor's number one rival is undoubtedly TCU. These are two schools that have been playing since 1899. They've been playing longer than any other rivalry in Texas. It is just these two schools at one point both used to be in Waco. So they shared a city. That was a long time ago, but they're both religious organizations, even if TCU is starting to push away from that a little bit. And so there's just so much like deep-seated connection between the fans, the teams, and certainly it's a recruiting rivalry. There's just so much that goes into TCU versus Baylor. And it's what makes this game so special. And even if in the recent history, you look back over the last really three seasons in 2022, TCU was on their way to eventually being the national championship. They come to Waco and, you know, Baylor almost upsets them. TCU has to run this crazy like fire drill field goal to win that game. And they go on to the national championship game where they eventually lost, but they still got there. And then even last year, you know, Baylor needed a last second field goal to beat TCU. It's a night game. They brought back black jerseys. The crowd was more hyped than I've ever seen them in my time, you know, covering Baylor. So there's just so much that goes into this rivalry, and it makes it one of the most unique in really all of America, but Texas specifically.
Zach, what kind of a rivalry is this? Hotly contested or just a nice rivalry between the two teams?
This is a hotly contested rivalry. It goes back. They recently introduced this as the Blue Bonnet Battle. Nobody calls it the Blue Bonnet Battle. People are just trying to take the rivalry away. This is the Revivalry. That's what it's called. It's between two schools that, like I said before, used to share a city. They both were from Waco. They battled for the same recruits. They have many of the same fans, all of that. And this is a very hotly contested rivalry. And if there's one game that Baylor fans want to win, it's certainly the one against TCU every year.
Zach, how good is quarterback Sawyer Robertson this season compared to last season? Because he's looked pretty impressive this season.
Sawyer Robertson is certainly one of the most incredible quarterbacks in the country, and all of the Heisman hype, all of the Heisman status that he's getting, even like some draft people are saying he's a first round pick, all of these things, he deserves it because he is truly what makes Baylor's offense go. And Baylor's offense is one of the best in the country. And he is kind of the guy that makes it all go. He makes the right plays. He makes the right decisions. And, you know, he is so much better than last year because he's in year two with offensive coordinator Jake Spavital. Spavital is a guy who coached Heisman Trophy winners like Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M. So he knows how to coach a quarterback. And so year two under Spavital, Sawyer Robertson feels more comfortable. The offense has a ton of weapons in the receiving game. Josh Cameron, Ashton Hawkins, Kobe Prentice, an Alabama transfer. The tight end, Michael Trigg, is a mismatch problem for any team in the country. And so Sawyer Robertson is able to kind of find those guys when he needs to. And it's really just if Baylor's going to make a push for the Big 12 title, Sawyer Robertson is going to be what gets him there, or who gets him there.
Baylor, of course, coming off of a bye after two straight wins. What did they need to work on the most during this off week?
Baylor coming off a bye week is huge. We saw last year. I have to go back to last year when I talk about Baylor's bye week, because going into the bye week a year ago, Baylor was 2-4 and things were dire. There was some chatter in Waco that if Baylor goes to Texas Tech after their first bye week a year ago, and loses that game, Dave Aranda might have gotten fired at that time. But they go to Texas Tech and they play one of the best games of the season. Talking about Sawyer Robertson before, he is from Lubbock. He wanted to go to Texas Tech. He throws 5 touchdowns in that game and Baylor just smokes Tech. And then they go on this 6-game winning streak to end the season. And, you know, it's a bye week that really sparked the all the momentum Baylor had. That's because of the bye week. And so in his time at Baylor, Dave Aranda, the head coach, is 4-1. I'm not counting the weird COVID season when there were a bunch of bye weeks. But he's 4-1 coming off of a bye, including his horrible 2023 season when one of his 3 wins came after a bye. So I think the bye will do a ton of good for the Bears. They get one of their key offensive linemen back in Omar Egbedian. Their running back, Bryson Washington, was very banged up after Oklahoma State game and the Kansas State game. He's a full go in practice. So the bye week has done a ton of good for the Bears. And I think what they most need to work on now is their defense, because defensively it has been a problem. They've allowed a lot of rushing yards to SMU and Auburn and even Oklahoma State, even though they won. And so there are some issues on the defensive side of things, but Dave Aranda is known as a defensive guru, for lack of a better term. And so I think that is the biggest focus coming out of the bye week for the Bears, is on the defensive side of things and just kind of righting the ship on that side of the ball.
Zach Smith, we really appreciate you joining the Big Stories podcast.
Number 2.
Last year, Cinderella takes on the Big 12's behemoth. Arizona State fans have to be staggering a bit this week. After 2 close wins over Baylor and TCU, the Sun Devils get waxed in Salt Lake City without starting quarterback Sam Levitt. At least they get to come home where they haven't lost a game since 2023. The bad part is that they now get to take on the most dominant team in the conference in Texas Tech. No problem, right? Chris Level of the Locked On Texas Tech podcast and Texas Tech Sports Network joins us to talk about the Red Raiders' road game in Tempe. Chris, how does it feel to be the best team in the state of Texas? Okay, maybe that's an unfair question since Texas A&M has also had a fantastic year this year, but how does it feel to at least be in contention as the best team in the state of Texas?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. Everybody here has typically been chasing University of Texas from a resource relevancy standpoint, or the brand standpoint, all that with Texas, and it's got to be driving those folks crazy that A&M and obviously Texas Tech have been taking a lot of the spotlight away. But it's what happens when you just keep winning. and winning solves a lot of problems, and you complain about this or you complain about that. But when you win, it's amazing how many doors open for a program and how many eyeballs get put on it.
When was the last time you felt there was this much hype around the Red Raiders football program?
Probably in that 2008 season. That 07 season when Mike Leach was here, they had a pretty good year and won a big bowl game, and a lot of that was coming back. That was Graham Harrell and Michael Crabtree and all that, and a lot of that roster was coming back. And so you kind of could see – so this potentially has some similarities. You finished the regular season that year 11-1, and that was the old BCS and all that, and you kind of got squeezed a little bit because you just lost just to the wrong team by just enough amount of points. Ended up going to the Cotton Bowl and losing to go 11-2, but that would be the answer there for sure.
I know there's a lot of excitement around this team right now in Lubbock, and you could even go the greater West Texas area, but have things been tempered a little bit because QB Baron Morton's injury issues? He's had to leave three games so far this season due to injuries.
Yeah, I mean, it's a question. I think, okay, so around here, the last 10 or so years, it's ironic because, I mean, the last time Texas Tech was played at BYU, or really the only time, you had to start an 18-year-old true freshman 2 years ago because your starter was dinged up, his backup was dinged up, and so, okay, who's the third guy? This has unfortunately been part of the dynamic around here in the last 10 or 12 years. Even when Pat Mahomes was here, he played through an injury the majority of the year, so you're used to dealing with not keeping a signal caller healthy. Now, the difference is you haven't always had somebody like Will Hammond, who is a big-time recruit, four-star type level prospect, and him coming in out of the bullpen and finishing games at Utah, home versus Kansas, that formula's worked. And then for the third-string guy, you've got a guy that's got Power Four experience in Mitch Griffiths, who started several games at Wake Forest 2 years ago. So they're equipped to handle it, so I don't want to say tempered, but Baron is a clear leader on this football team. There's no doubt about that.
Cameron Dickey has not rushed for over 100 yards in a game this season, then goes for 263 against Kansas. Are they going to ride him a little bit more against the Sun Devils this weekend? And what will happen if ASU stacks the box?
Yeah, so that's what was fascinating, because he got more carries this past weekend than Cam Dickey, because Jacoby Williams kind of got slightly dinged up against the University of Houston. So they kind of held out Jacoby Williams. And Jacoby Williams has got all kinds of ability. As people maybe saw that in the Utah game, one of the first plays from scrimmage was like a 75-yard screen pass, and he's just weaving in and out of guys. So I think you'll get a better version of Jacoby Williams. But I think that's what makes Texas Tech so good right now, is that they're a bit of a chameleon. How do you want to play us? We can do this however you want to get it done. You want us to – because I think the last couple of teams have invited you to run it. And against Houston, you had two guys basically approach 100 yards. One did on the ground. And then this past weekend, okay, let's major in Cam Dickey, and he goes for just under 300 yards, as you mentioned. Other teams have said, hey, we're gonna play press man coverage. We're going to load the box. We're not giving you the run game. This is what Utah did, and you threw for, I think, well over 300. So that's the beauty of what they've put together here, is that you can kind of attack teams in a variety of ways, and they'll take what you give them. You can't defend it all, or it's been difficult to do that so far.
Chris Lovell, you're a pro. Thank you for joining us here on the Big Stories Podcast.
It was a pleasure. Good luck to you guys, and go Cougs this weekend against Utah.
Number one.
I can't say much more than red versus blue. It's number 23 Utah versus number 15 BYU. Fox's Big Noon kickoff will be in town for a game that doesn't start at noon. It's going to start at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. That's how big this game is. BYU looking to remain undefeated, and the Utes need a win to stay in title contention. I asked Jason Shepherd of BYU Sports Nation and Josh Furlong of KSL.com and the Utah Checkdown podcast to give us each team's one key rivalry to the game, their favorite rivalry moment, and their least favorite rivalry moment. Take it away, guys.
The biggest key to this game, and quite frankly, it's a key to the game every time you play, but it's turnovers. And the reason I say turnovers, especially in this rivalry game, for whatever reason, turnovers have played a massive role. And so I know both sides of this rivalry game are really focused on that. In my mind, the team that wins the turnover battle, it will go a long, long way to getting the W in the game.
The biggest key in this game for me is going to be the trench play. I think you've got two teams that are pretty similar in how they operate, whether that be on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball. They have similar stats and they've been able to be pretty efficient in what they do on both sides of the ball. And so for me, you know, the team that establishes itself the best in the trenches is probably going to have the most success. Yeah, there's going to be, you know, potential turnovers. There's going to be different things that way that can impact the game. But I think the team that is able to establish trench play, whether that be on the offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, you know, whoever is can be the one that's aggressive, take their chances, be physical, set the tone in the trenches. To me, that feels like the team that's going to win, because I think there's just not a ton of edge between these two teams and how they operate. And so whoever can do that is probably going to have the most success.
My most favorite memory of the rivalry game, hands down, is 2006. It was Beck to Harleen. It was at Rice-Eccles Stadium. I was on the sideline next to the BYU football team, and I was down on that end zone where the game-winning touchdown was caught by Johnny Harleen. That easily was the greatest memory I have of the rivalry game. I will never forget that moment when it looked so bleak, and then as John Beck throws against the grain and finds a wide open Johnny Harleen sliding to catch a wide open football in the end zone. Just an unbelievable sports moment for BYU.
As a journalist, I don't necessarily, you know, look for favorite moments inside the rivalry. I've been covering it long enough that there's been many over the years, and two essentially stand out to me. One is the improbable year where Utah is down to Jason Shelley as its quarterback, and BYU goes on this big, you know, run and takes this lead that just quite honestly didn't look like Utah was going to win at Rice-Eccles Stadium. And suddenly Jason Shelley comes back and he marches down and Utah goes on to win the game. And it was just this improbable feeling about a quarterback who, you know, he had talent, but he just wasn't the guy that you wanted in that situation. And he came out there and became this, you know, this local hero to the Utah fan base that came back and won the rivalry and kept that streak going along and just really kind of cemented himself in that lore and doing everything that he could to make it work. And you know, those are those memories that I think a lot of people have of just having somebody going out of themselves and stepping up and doing what they need to be able to be effective. The other one is, you know, the year that the streak broke. Going into that game at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, it was really kind of a cool feeling to walk into that stadium and just kind of get this palpable buzz from BYU fans. I can still kind of feel that today, where you walked into the stadium, and I like to go into the stadiums and kind of get a vibe and sense of how things are going to turn. And it doesn't mean it's always perfect, but there was just this sneaking suspicion in my mind that there was no doubt that BYU was going to win that game. And it obviously turned out that way. They end the streak at 9, and BYU goes out there and just puts out a dominant show, right? Like, this was one of those games where you could tell that BYU wanted it more and just simply performed. The crowd lived up to it, because in you know, some of the years past, it was kind of more, I wouldn't even call it an apathetic fan base, but I think there was just not a lot of, I wouldn't even call it hatred, but there wasn't a lot of the same feeling that we get now that the two teams are in the conference. You know, Utah had been beating up on BYU and they just didn't have the teams necessarily to compete at that time. And suddenly, you know, they just knew that this was going to be the year, and it was. And so, you know, those are kind of those things that as a journalist you look for and you cheer for, because they're fun. You know, you get to be able to see these cool storylines and see how things turned. Obviously, that changed the course for BYU in a lot of ways for this rivalry, coming in and having three straight wins and different things that way. It's been fun to be able to see these different things on both sides of the ball and be able to witness that.
Unfortunately, there are a lot of my least favorite moments in the rivalry. Quite frankly, anytime BYU loses, it's my least favorite part of the rivalry. But I think I'm going to go with the 3-0 snow game at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. And that was at the beginning of the Urban Meyer era at Utah. And I have never liked Urban Meyer. The fact that he was the coach at the time that brought Utah into Provo and snapped BYU's consecutive game scoring streak, the fact that it happened against Utah, and quite frankly, that really started, I wouldn't say started, it jumped Utah, it elevated them to another level when Urban came, because what Ron McBride had done really got them on the right path. And then when Urban got here, he was able to take that team and sort of elevate them. And it kind of all started right around that time. So I just really despise that game for so many reasons.
And then my least favorite about this, you know, I don't know that I have a least favorite in the sense of, you know, oh, this was devastating. I think it's more just kind of the vitriol that goes on between the two fan bases at times. And I think when it goes beyond the typical banter, which I think is fun, right? Like, college football should have that banter, and they should have that, you know, that fun to be able to lead up and take pride and pump your chest about your team. But when it turns vitriolic and hatred towards the others, to me, that's just not what I love, right? Like, you can still have some fun comments about each other, and you can still say that you hate them or whatever, you know, those types of things. But when it turns on a far more negative tone of hating different people in a way that it becomes more personal, to me, those are my least favorite. And I think those types of things can definitely mar how people view this rivalry. The rivalry is a great rivalry, and it's one that should be considered one of the best in the country. But when you take it to that next level, it really kind of changes the tone and is not, you know, it's uncalled for.
The big stories, top five quarterbacks.
This is tough this week, as some of the guys with the better stats lost. Like TCU's Josh Hoover had 376 yards, 3 TDs, but also had 2 interceptions in their loss at Kansas State. One of them was a pick six. Or I could even throw in there UCF's Cam Fancher, who was injured early in the season, came back to play in this game. He threw for 222 yards, rushed for 108 yards, and a TD in the night's loss to Cincinnati. But that lone touchdown was scored late in the game when the Bearcats had a comfortable 20-3 lead. So I'm going to go with QBs who won this week. At number 5, BYU's Bear Bachmeyer. Yeah, he was only 12 for 29 for 172 yards through the air. He had a TD, but also 2 interceptions. He also had 89 yards rushing and 2 TDs. Those 2 touchdowns tied the game in regulation and won it for BYU in double overtime. Number 4, Kansas State's Avery Johnson, 16 for 26, 198 yards, 3 TDs, 13 rushes, 29 yards. Number 3, Houston's Connor Wegman, 21 of 30, 306 yards, and 2 TDs against Oklahoma State. Yeah, it was against Oklahoma State, but it was still a good win. If he can stay healthy, he could be the key to the Cougs season. Number 2, Devin Dampier of Utah, 7 for 12, 104 yards through the air, but 120 yards rushing and 3 TDs in the Utes' win over ASU. Number 1, Colorado's Caden Salter, 16 of 25, 255 yards and 2 TDs. It's the Buffs' first conference win, and they did it against Iowa State, so that's why he gets to be number 1.
The big stories, big man on campus.
I sometimes mention other contenders this week, but let's not overthink this. The award goes to Texas Tech running back Cameron Dickey, 21 rushes for 263 yards and 2 TDs against Kansas. The first time he touched the ball, he ran 71 yards for a touchdown. Okay, I will give an honorable mention to Iowa State running back Abu Sama, who had 177 yards rushing and 2 TDs in the Cyclones' loss. Check out this Thursday's Big Stories episode with Locked On Oklahoma State podcaster Cody Stovall. This guy has lived a full life, from playing college football to working in the oil fields to becoming a podcaster. But the adversity he faced to become a podcaster, that's what makes it a big story. A big thanks to Zach Smith, Chris Level, Josh Furlong, and Jason Shepard for joining the podcast today. Download and subscribe to the Big Stories podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Cleon Wall. The Big Stories pod will return soon, and Big Stories is a production of BYU Radio.